Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to part two of the French Connections broadcast today. Of course, you know it's Wednesday. It is the 19th day of April 2006, and coming to you, as always, from central France. My guest today is someone who knows a great deal about many of the subjects that we've discussed here on the program over time, and that is the fact that the American economy is in a very fragile state. We've been flooding the world with dollars for a very long time, and I think we've inflated. We've got inflation coming in the pipeline that people are not even ready for, I don't believe. And this gentleman that I've invited today, his name is Chuck Butler. He is the president of EverBank, and that is a internet banking organization. And he also writes a daily brief on many different websites. It's called the Daily Fenning. You can subscribe to it, or you can read his unsubscribed part over on kitco.com, which is another great place to take a look at all current information. His name's Chuck Butler, and I want to welcome him to the show. Chuck, are you with me?
Yes, I am, Gerald.
Wonderful to have you here, Chuck. I got to tell you something. You know, as I told you before, I've got a background in this in business and finance, and I've been calling the implosion of the housing market and many other things and for a long time, and it was very odd to me to see that this thing kept hanging on. All of the fundamentals told me that we were looking at a downturn economically 18 months ago. How is it that these folks have been able to keep this thing inflated so long? And you mentioned to me, people kept saying to you, you know, you're a doom and gloomer, but the numbers weren't lying to me, were they?
No, they weren't lying to you. It really has been one of those things that the low interest rate structure in the U.S. has fueled an abundant amount of dollars to be spent.
Yep.
And those dollars to be spent have gone into all sorts of things and kept the economy moving along. And given the appearance that everything is just, you know, peachy in the U.S., where we all know that most of those dollars were borrowed.
Yeah.
U.S. savings rate went into a negative status last year.
That's right.
And, you know, the U.S. consumer has done the same thing the U.S. government has done, and that's gotten themselves into a huge, gargantuan deficit.
Well, I mean, what we're doing is we're saddling our future generations with an enormous responsibility, I believe.
That is correct.
Yeah, yeah. Well, here's the second question. I mean, look, we've got an inverted yield curve. What that says to me is that we've got terrible imbalance in the economy. We're looking at, $71 a barrel oil, probably going as high as 85 or 90, if not 100. And any commodity-based economy in the world right now is finding a serious appreciation in their currency against the dollar. And also, the breakout point of 123 has been reached on the euro-dollar exchange rate. What do you see in the immediate future with these different areas I just mentioned?
Well, first of all, I think that the dollar has been supported in the last year by two different things. One was the Repatriation Act that allowed the U.S. corporations overseas to bring back earnings at a reduced tax rate.
That's right.
That equaled to about $300 billion worth of movement back into the U.S. dollar last year. So
mm-hmm.
those people were selling currency and buying dollars and bringing it back at a reduced rate. The other thing have been the interest rate hikes. And a lot of people a lot of investors abroad have looked at that and said, you know, that's where they need to go. Well, the problem with that is that those rates are going to probably end. Yesterday, the FOMC minutes were very dovish. And if we get a rate hike in May, I would be very surprised based on those minutes. So,
well, didn't they say there was some pipeline inflation that they also felt? I mean, this guy Bernanke doesn't really have – I can't really read him as well as I'd like, but – it still seems to me that we got some serious inflation in the pipeline.
Well, yeah, that's, you know, here's the problem, is that the U.S. economy really, in my opinion, is just kind of muddling along.
Yeah.
And they see, you know, the Fed sees that and sees that they probably need to stop raising interest rates.
Mm.
So, but if they keep going, okay, they're going to shut down the economy altogether.
Well, how are they going to get foreign?
They're going to be in between this rock and a hard place.
Well, they already are, I think, Chuck, and they can't get anybody to buy their paper at the moment.
Well, you know, this rock and a hard place for them is going to be a place where I don't think Bernanke is going to feel very comfortable.
No,
I don't think that he's going to know how to deal with it, and I don't think anybody except Paul Volcker probably would have known how to deal with it. So, it's one of those things that. That's going to scare, I believe, foreign investors from buying U.S. Assets, which that supports the dollar if they are attracted to it. So dollar support will wane, and the main currency, offset currency to the dollar in the world is the euro.
Right.
So the euro will advance, and this time around, as opposed to a couple of years ago when the euro gained over 50% against the dollar, this time around the euro or the eurozone actually is seeing growth, global economic growth, and it may be very small, but at least they're seeing it, and the ECB has seen it and seen the problems with the rising oil prices and inflation, and starts to raise interest rates. So as the Fed starts to stop interest rate hikes, the ECB and the other and some other Asian countries are starting to raise interest rates.
Right. Well, I don't see Trichet. I see Trichet in the same kind of place, though. And here's the interesting thing that you and I have both witnessed over our lifetimes. I'm 50, Chuck, and I got to tell you, I've watched them export all of our manufacturing base, both here in Europe and in America. And essentially, all we do is send paper from desk to desk in America today. And France is in the same boat. I mean, we don't produce anything. And I'm wondering how long this smoke and mirrors act can go on. And I don't know that it's a sustainable situation. Any economy that produces virtually nothing except electronic transfer, that's not a sustainable environment. And basically, what we've done is we've shifted everything away from our own manufacturing base to an Asian base, and that someday has to come home to roost. And I'm wondering if we're starting to see some of the effects of that.
I think we are. I think that as you see the, basically if you look at the U.S.'s deficit, the majority of the IOUs that they issue every month are held by Asian countries.
Mm-hmm.
So as the current account deficit grows in the U.S., really there's only two ways to correct that. And basically, both of them have to be, in force at the same time. One is a huge correction in the dollar, and the other would be for the economy to go into some sort of recession.
Yeah.
Now, for the dollar to gain or to lose that appreciation that it has, it has to lose it against the Asian currencies, because that's the only place you're going to see any gain in the current account deficit.
That's right.
Since they hold all the IOUs, their currencies have to gain against the dollar. So that is something that I believe is starting to really get on the minds of investors and traders as we see currencies like the Thai baht gain over 8.5% against the dollar so far this year.
Well, I think the renminbi, if they rejig the renminbi over in China and actually get it free floating, which I doubt they're going to do because their rural economy couldn't sustain the damage. See, everybody who's playing this game internationally right now is in a similar situation. Everyone talks about China's 10% growth. That's all well and good for their manufacturing sector, but they've got 85% of their population still living in rural communities,
mm-hmm.
and they can't support that kind of rejig on their currency either. So no matter where you look, somebody's going to feel some terrible pain coming, and I think America is in for some rude awakenings quite soon.
Well, it is, and the problem will come from the fear of our inability to attract foreign investment.
That's right. Well, this moves me on to the next subject that I got. I mean, of course, I'm sitting here at my desk looking at the price of gold today, and of course, we're looking at almost 6:30. And geez, just 6 days ago, it was 5.590, and we're talking about 5-6% leap in just a few days. That's an astonishing jump. Where do you see the next resistance point on gold?
Well, you know what? We were looking at that, and I don't see it coming for a while.
I don't either.
Yeah,
I don't either.
You know, I thought that 600 would be a very psychological level for gold.
Yeah.
And once it took it, it would be able to bounce very high, and it's certainly showing that it could do that.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that with all the instability in the world right now,
yeah,
and all this tough rhetoric with Iran, and oil prices above $70 a barrel, and like you said, probably even going higher, the rush to gold, is certainly prevalent right now.
Yeah.
And the thing is that most of the move from like 350 to 500 or so was, you know, were institutions and central banks and things like that buying gold. Now we're starting to see the actual consumer come in and buy gold.
And they're actually demanding to hold it themselves, aren't they?
Yes.
And that tells me that they're not confident in where we're heading. I mean, why would you want the physical gold? If you're an investor, I mean, you have to go in. If, let's say, you've got a $500,000 portfolio and you're gonna move 20% of it into gold, and you go into to your local gold dealer and say, I want $60,000, and put it in this bag. I mean, you know, that's some scary stuff.
Right. And that's, gold has always been a store of value.
That's right,
and so that's why people would want to own it and have it in, you know, under their mattress or in their safe deposit box. But there are other ways to own it and have availability to it, and they need, you know, they probably need to look at those sorts of things too.
Well, the traded funds, yeah. And also I looked at the futures market today, and of course it's on a one way ride up as well. And I thought I saw the only resistance point I could find on the charting, and I call myself a bit of a technician, with 720, and why I picked that number, it was just an inflection point that I found when I graphed it. But 720 looks like the next resistance point to me. I may be wrong about that. Some other people have written that it was 680, and I'm sure there'll be a couple of pullbacks between now and those numbers, but I see pretty clear sailing into that point.
Yeah, and that's why I said we just didn't see anything for a while. We just didn't see anything that was going to stop it, except for profit taking, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And there should be some sort of small correction, just to reform the base so it can move higher.
Well, who do you see? I think a central bank will have to step in and maybe dump a couple of tons or something. I mean, unless someone does that, this panic buying, like we saw in the early 80s when it reached 850, you know, if you take that and juxtapose that same price range of 850 onto today's dollar, we're looking at $2,100 gold.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is that a possibility in your mind?
Well, I think it is. I think it certainly is, because, we're always talking to people about looking at trends in the past and looking at history, history of currency trends and commodity trends.
Yeah.
And, they've always been very similar.
Yeah.
And they run for a certain amount of time and everything else. And there's no reason why this current commodity trend shouldn't, have the same sort of run, which in today's dollars would take it above some numbers that most people would think is unthinkable.
Well, but it reached 850 in almost a blink of an eye at that point. In other words, momentum investing, people just piled in like it was, do you remember the one before the stock market imploded? I used to look in the stock list and say, I'll pick this stock. And I mean, it didn't matter what you picked. A rising market was lifting all ships. And what I'm saying right now is commodity buying, especially in silver and gold, is going mad, and it looks like people are just piling in from everywhere.
Yeah, as you mentioned, silver has been quite the mover also.
Oh, yeah.
And I think where that is coming from is the fact that a lot of people would love to own gold,
mm-hmm.
but see it as pretty expensive to own.
Yep.
And see silver as something that has more attractiveness in its ability to be bought.
That's right.
And so silver has taken a very nice run here.
Well, I'm going to ask you one last question before I let you go, because I know you got to get back to your work. I'm taking a look now at a very precarious geopolitical environment, and I spend a lot of time commenting on geopolitics, and especially how our central bankers have been involved in world manipulation. And by that, I mean there's a Federal Reserve. You know, my listeners know is not a governmental organization,
right?
And these same people are big players in the European Central Bank as well as the Bank of England. And when you take a look at what's happening in the world and what's being done on behalf of this community in the Middle East, and now looking at what's happened, you know, the lies that came out of Iraq. I mean, Saddam Hussein didn't do anything on 9/11, and you know, we know that, you know that. The press has reported it, and yet we're still over there, and yet we're still going to move into the country beside it. And one need wonder. What's motivating us over there, and what the heck is going on in the minds of our leadership?
Well, you know, it really does all come back to oil. That is, you know, Iran has mentioned on several occasions now that they were going to create an oil bourse.
Yeah, and they did, didn't they?
Well, you know what? It's delayed right now. So it, as far as I know, it's in a delayed pattern, but they're still looking to open it full force.
Mm-hmm.
And what that would do is it would allow people to buy oil from them, but also for people to sell oil to them. And all of those transactions would not be done in dollars.
That's right.
Would be done in euros.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that has a lot to do with a lot of the rhetoric that's going on right now.
Well, but I take a look at that, though. You know, I mean, are we in the business of sending our young men and women over to die in a country for oil? I mean,
I would certainly hope not. But
no, but in reality, Chuck, we are. And when I face that reality as a 50-year-old man, and having young sons that are old enough to go and do the very thing that I'm discussing right now, I find it offensive in the extreme. And I think more and more Americans are beginning to wonder what is going on with our leaders. And I'm wondering, where is this going to end? And the last thing I guess I'd like to maybe have you comment on is, it doesn't seem like oil is really something that they want more of on the market. Basically, what they're trying to do is eliminate oil from the market so that they can get $100 a barrel for less input. In other words, if the world's awash with oil, they're fighting for every dollar of profit. When it's at 100, they're making 10 times their money.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me that to send our young men and women into a depleted uranium environment of the Middle East on behalf of oil, Israel, and logistics is what somebody, Ray McGovern, the ex-CIA agent, said, that it's oil. It's oil, it's Israel, it's logistics, is what he said.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody will disagree with that. And I don't think any one of those three reasons is good enough for my young son or anybody's young son to go over there and die for.
No, I agree with you.
Well, you know, this has been a very interesting interview. I think it's been extremely informative, and I want to thank you, Chuck. I want to tell my listeners before we go here that you can be reached at EverBank World Markets. The number is 1-800-926-4922, or you can go to www.everbank.com, or you can see the Daily Fenning, which is your little blog that you run every day and talking about all the things. I read it every day, by the way. I it seems like I know you. I bet you get that a lot.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I'm fighting a geopolitical thing here, and I'm a little more political than you probably know, but I'm an honest man. And I think honesty is what we really need today from everybody, and I want to thank you for being honest with us about what you feel is happening in the world, Chuck.
Oh, good. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, and I wish you a good trading day, my friend.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye now.
Goodbye.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Chuck Butler, and again, he is the president of EverBank. He is a gentleman that has been involved in trading both currencies as well as gold and just international investment for some time, and when I read his column on a daily basis, it's certainly an insight to where we go, where we're going, and it's the reason I called him specifically to have him comment on these gold prices. Again, and I didn't feel like I wanted to place Mr. Butler in any difficult position about some of the other geopolitical beliefs that you and I share on this programming every day, and I don't think that was what this was really about. What it was more about is talking about these efforts of ours to make sure you save some of your money. If you don't get involved in putting money aside right now, either through a gold purchasing or something, you're going to find your little nest egg turning into nothing. So that's the show for today. I want to thank you all for listening. My name is Daryl Bradford-Smith. IamTheWitness.com is the website. So till next time, be well.